Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
We're really kind of picking up the pace again. You know, the biggest sort of concern we've had in the last month or so has been this, once again, COVID-related labor issues at the processing plants did cause some slowdowns. That seems to be past now. So I think this market's going to kind of pick up, the underlying trend here.
So there are definitely some challenges for the cattle market. Dr. Darrell Peel is an Oklahoma State University livestock economist.
I think, we're going to notice that cattle numbers continue to be tighter in general. And so in the short run here, it's probably going to depend on winter weather as much as anything. But barring, major storm impacts, these markets should perform very well in the next few weeks.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
The industry's been trying to deal again with some slowdowns in processing. That kind of put a little pause on the fed cattle market, although it appears that by the end of the week, this last week, we had kind of picked up a little bit of that momentum again.
Dr. Darrell Peel is Oklahoma State University livestock economist.
And, the preliminary slaughter data would suggest that the slowdowns that we've seen are temporary and, in fact, mostly past us at this point. The volumes in the preliminary slaughter data would suggest that we're back up to as good a level as we can have under the current continuing labor issues in the industry.
Talks about aggressive feeder cattle bids.
Certainly, again, we've seen strong prices. Part of that is the underlying general trend that we've been in for, quite a few weeks now. The other part of it, I think, is related to some of the storm disruptions we had from the winter storm a week or so ago. That disrupted cattle auction volumes, and so kind of making up for that this last week and still struggling, in fact, in some cases with auction volumes still down a little bit. So there's strong demand and at least temporarily a little bit limited supply that's driving these markets a little bit higher.
Still not clear, but with high beef prices and current economic situations, we could be destroying demand.
That's something that we're keeping an eye on. I think it's really not clear yet. If you kind of look at the normal seasonality of box beef prices, they're kind of flat through these first couple months after the holiday period. So it's a little bit hard to say. Certainly there's some concern and some potential for some inflationary pressures affecting these markets. I don't think we really know for sure. I think we'll have to watch this market a little bit going forward and see that. Certainly we're seeing some adjustments in some specific products that are related more to those markets in particular. But as far as general pressures yet, it's just really not clear at this point in time.
There's no doubt that the coronavirus and the ongoing pandemic has caused some concerns for the market.
Some of it's built into the market. Certainly we are continuing to struggle with some COVID impacts. Although having been on the road and certainly, where I'm at right now, the restaurant business is pretty robust. There are some, requirements, if you will, but it doesn't really seem to be affecting traffic from a limited perspective. And I think generally that's probably the case. So I suspect the market, pretty well reflects these things. We could see and probably would expect to see some continued improvement just because we've never really fully recovered from all of the impacts on food service that have been in place since the pandemic really began almost 2 years ago.
But a bright spot has been beef exports.
The December numbers came in and confirmed that, for the year 2021, the beef trade situation was just phenomenal. We set new records in terms of quantity and value of trade, and that certainly has been part of, the very positive and optimistic story we've had for beef markets going into 2022. There's some individual market impacts and so on and that we'll be watching going forward. But the international component of total beef demand has been very robust and very supportive to the market.
And now we have to be focused on political strains.
In terms of direct impacts, if you look at the sort of typical, global market flows, I really don't know that there's a lot of direct impacts, but there certainly could be some indirect impacts if we were to see, some sort of major escalation of this situation. Just the general impacts on the global economy, obviously the stock market would reflect that. The oil industry, oil prices would reflect that. All of those are things that would certainly then have subsequent effects on many markets, including beef markets. So it is very much a situation that we have to keep an eye on.
It's Agriculture Today.
On the phone with Joe Guzman, Director of Sales for Equinom Smarter Sesame. Joe, 2022's here. You have lots of opportunities in sesame.
That's right, Stephen. We have grain handlers with 2022 agreements ready to be signed. Smarter Sesame makes a great rotational crop for producers who are planning for the new crop and season. With inputs on the rise, Smarter Sesame is a great choice for low input acres.
Joe, if somebody wants to find out more, how can they do that?
They can call 1-833-SESAME or visit equinom.com.
The advantages that we have to provide financial services in the ag is top-notch. It's the best in the country. We have a capital management plan that we all celebrate and hold very close to us at Capital Farm Credit. And that capital management plan is premised on the fact that we're a cooperative. So as a cooperative, we believe that the members of the cooperative own the capital of the cooperative. At Capital Farm Credit, together, we're better.
This is Agriculture Today.
I think we've made a lot of progress in the last year. You know, we've seen at convention this week, we heard from USDA Secretary Vilsack. We heard from Robert Bonney, who's kind of heading up climate and conservation programs at USDA. And probably a year ago, you would have heard from them that really when we talk about sustainable practices, climate smart agriculture, it's all going to be focused on, you know, crop agriculture. Think cover crops and no-till, things that you can do in the commodity space that would be a climate smart practice.
Mary Thomas Hart is Environmental Counsel for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association on kicking off the debate for the next farm bill.
But, you know, in the last year, we've done a lot of work to make sure that USDA is keeping in mind the valuable practices that are put in place on livestock operations. Grazing management is an excellent example. Manure management is huge. Feed additive use to reduce direct methane emissions. Those are all things that you can't do in a field of corn, right? Those are all things that only happen on a livestock operation. And so many of those are only happening on cattle operations. I mean, we need to make sure, and we have worked really hard to make sure that whatever USDA programs we see that are related to climate smart agriculture, that livestock is included.
Not just the cattle industry watching this, so is the cotton industry. Cody Besson is with Plains Cotton Growers.
Certainly this is starting to play out into the timeline of developing the next five-year farm bill. Right now, the committees themselves are starting to do what they deem as oversight hearings, which is just the beginning stages of the process. So most are well aware that Secretary Vilsack testified before the House and Senate Agricultural Committees a couple of weeks ago and just laid out some of the implementation of farm policy programs underneath the 2018 Farm Bill that we're currently operating underneath, as well as just some challenges that they've seen throughout the process. We've had Robert Bonney testify this last week as the Undersecretary of Farm Policy and Farm Programs, and kind of reemphasize the same. So this is just one of the initial steps that Congress members, congressional members call for to try to get a broad overview of what they enacted several years ago, how it's been working from a managerial aspect, and how improvements can be made possibly moving forward. Next steps really kind of remain to be seen, but traditionally what Congress would do next is hold several field hearings across the U.S. Or some in D.C. where they would have invited testimony from production segments, from producers specifically or ranchers specifically, to be able to come in and provide layman's terms of how those programs have had a direct impact to the users of those programs. So they can see from a boots on the ground standpoint of how things are working, as well as have feedback on issues that may have arisen throughout the last 4 years or so. Presumably that will happen moving forward, whether it be this spring or sometime in the fall, remains to be seen. But that is kind of the next steps. And that kind of preps everything going into to 2023, where legislation itself will start to be written, provided that that we get down that path. But that is kind of the timeline with the goal. The overall goal would be to implement a new five-year farm bill by the end of the 2023 calendar year. So a lot of, as you mentioned, a lot of length in time in between now and then, and certainly a lot of discussions will be had, as well as we'll have other political maneuvers. We'll have an election in between that time frame, and so all that could change some of the pace and course as well. But overall, feel good at least that they're now discussing the oversight of current farm policy and ad hoc assistance, at least starting the process versus waiting till the end of this current farm bill and then trying to really ramp up efforts and trying to flesh out ideas and issues that we may have experienced over the last five-year bill.
It's Agriculture Today.
When your field calls for the perfect type of tough, go all in on FiberMax Cotton to deliver the right seed for whatever you're up against. Like the FiberMax 1621 GL variety. Strong as an ox, fights like a bull. Built to buck stress, boost yield quality, and muscle up when bacterial blight throws down. Whether you're looking for that type of tough or another, you can find it at FiberMax.com. FiberMax Cotton Seed from BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Every drop counts. Introducing the Patriot 50 Series Sprayer from Case IH that puts every drop of product exactly where you want it. Enhanced LED lights, a cab designed for all-day comfort, and more precise spraying technology. Because just like you, we know every drop counts. Visit your local Wiley implement for details on the new Patriot 50 Series Sprayer.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
It's like it's leapfrogging. It's going so fast. And part of that is driven by need. For us with our specialty crops, especially the availability of workforce and an aging workforce, the increasing costs of that, and where will the jobs of the future be? And that really plays into one of our focuses, which is how do we have more young people know about the fantastic career opportunities to be the problem solvers to help feed the world and nourish them better? Who wouldn't want to be an ag? But they have to come see this kind of stuff to get as excited as I am, right?
Karen Ross is Secretary of California's Department of Food and Ag at World Ag Expo. But we've got to have somebody to transition this to. Kurt Covington is with Ag America Lindy.
What does that discussion feel like? What does it sound like? And where do you have those kinds of discussions, right? And I mentioned it today, probably one of the worst places to have any kind of conversations about succession and management of the business and interests in running the business and what these the younger generation sees as their role. The worst place to do that is around the kitchen table. There is a lot of emotion around the kitchen table. In fact, there's also a level of comfort. And maybe this is a time when it's okay to be uncomfortable. So where do you have it? I don't know. Rural America, there's a lot of Hampton Inns. There's a lot of Holiday Inn Expresses. You know, go run a small conference room, you know, seating eight people and sit down and have that discussion. And you have it in a neutral place where there is, it's treated just like any other business where if you were a public company or you were a large business and you had hundreds of employees, you wouldn't have it around your kitchen table. So whether it's four or five kids in the business, you probably still shouldn't have it around the kitchen table.
On making good decisions using good management.
If you look at anybody on the family farm today, right, their life is kind of broken into three components, right? What I call doing the doing, whatever doing, milking the cow, you know, running the tractor, working in the repair shop. That's the vocational piece of it, right? Which all farmers, including myself and including you probably, that's the part you enjoy. That's it's not the economic benefits. Sometimes it's the psychological and emotional benefit of that. But in today's world, with the average age of the average farmer being 62 years old, you talk about being uncomfortable. That leader of that business needs to transition away from doing the doing all day long. And, you know, still spending a good majority of their time negotiating, as I talked in there, negotiating with themselves, negotiating with suppliers, family members. Who knows? Negotiating with yourself is the thing that happens in the middle of the night. You wake up and say, you know, geez, should I have made that decision? But most importantly is in that form of management leaves very little time to make decisions, informed decisions, not just decisions. And right, any of us who's listening to this today could probably pinpoint someone in their life that was really horrible making decisions. And it's because they didn't go through the proper process of managing the planning and the control process of that business, right? The good business owners, as I've seen it over the years, kind of flip that pyramid over, and they still spend time doing the doing, but they have delegated that to others in the family, right? On the job training, spending time doing the things that need to get done and learning by mistake, still spending the same amount of time negotiating, but spending the majority of their time making decisions, because the younger generation of that family is looking to the leader of that family who's going to transition it to make really good, sound decisions based on good information.
It's Agriculture Today.
Stock up and save on John Deere filters and packaged oil at the South Plains Implement semi-annual sale. Now through February 28th, receive 10 to 12% off John Deere filters and packaged oil for large ag equipment, and 10% off compact tractor home maintenance kits and oil when you purchase filters. No payments, no interest options available on qualifying purchases. Some restrictions apply. See us for details. With 14 locations, there's a South Plains Implement near you. South Plains Implement, where farm meets family.
What can you get for 2 cents these days? How about new, more efficient wheat varieties? Better market access for Texas wheat producers and increased demand to your product. Each year, the Texas Wheat Producers Board achieves these goals by investing producer contributions to promote wheat through research, education, and market development. Who knew 2 cents could be so valuable? A message from the Texas Wheat Producers Board.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
This is not something where we can do this alone. That's a very big priority for the president and for Ambassador Tai.
Ambassador Sarah Bianchi is Deputy U.S. Trade Representative.
We need our partners to engage in all aspects of our trade relationships and in all aspects of our diplomacy. And so we have been working with our allies and partners on strategies to address China's non-market trade practices, to work towards a level playing field and competition. I think the U.S. and the EU certainly have a shared interest in building up our common values to protect mutual competitiveness and technological leadership, and from the challenges, again, posed by the non-market economies, including China. So we've done a number of things to date, and there's more to come, but certainly, there was the technology, the TTC, a council that that the president launched with Secretary Blinken and Secretary Raimondo and Ambassador Tai. That's important. We're having a new trilateral relationship with the EU and Japan. So we're working in all kinds of ways to try and bolster our relationship with allies so that we can work on these issues together.
But since there's no issue really in rejoining the Trans-Pacific Partnership, can a non-binding trade agreement work?
You know, I think this initiative is really is actually pretty exciting and will be pretty robust. I think it's I know there's a lot of questions about it. But I think, look, first of all, the fundamental goal of the framework is, of course, to strengthen our economic ties in the region, you know, improve our connectivity. And the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework is the centerpiece of that. But it's going to include, you know, it's co-chaired by us, Ambassador Tai and Secretary Raimondo, and it's going to include, you know, fair and resilient trade, supply chain resilience, infrastructure and decarbonization, and tax and anti-corruption. And we're the lead agency for fair and resilient trade. And I think regarding the trade piece, we are going to be seeking binding commitments with our trading partners, whether it's in digital area, labor, or environment. In the digital, we're going to be looking at a number of issues like addressing data localization, issues like cross-border data flows. We're also, in this initiative, going to be looking at competition issues. And so I think people, when they really see the details, are going to find that this is, rather robust. It doesn't, it's not going to contain market access commitments, but there are going to be high standard rules to increase interoperability, competitiveness among the parties to the arrangement. So I think we just are a little bit in the early innings here, and that as people learn more, they'll find that there's a fair amount of meat to the approach we're thinking about.
But any kind of trade pact has to keep agriculture in mind. William Kimbrell is with Cotton Incorporated.
The United States is number one exporting country of cotton. So we, as in the United States, export cotton to over 30 countries around the world. In 2021 year, we exported 16.3 million bales, which is actually more cotton than we produced. But we were able to tap into stocks and ship that cotton around the world and meet the demand. That also is probably part of the reason that we're seeing some of that price support that we're having today is the high demand that we had last year.
It's Agriculture Today.
When it comes to farming in dry conditions, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers looking to improve yield potential while protecting their bottom line rely on dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Bred, tested, and made tough to handle the toughest growing conditions. Stay strong this season. Plant dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
This is Agriculture Today.
Yeah, we've done a couple of different benchmarking surveys with our members to look at the ongoing issues and see how they're being impacted.
Looking at near-term expectations, John Gold is with the National Retail Federation.
You know, I wish I had good news coming out of the survey as far as what's going to happen in 2022. But I think many who respond to the survey expect more of the same in 2022. Many don't expect the disruptions to subside until later on in 2022, maybe Q4. And that's because there's still a lot of uncertainty about what's happening in the supply chain, a lot of uncertainty over the pandemic and the impact of the pandemic. You know, we just went through the Omicron surge and it's the, you know, what's next? What's the next variant that's going to impact and have an impact? We talked about, the China having the zero tolerance for COVID. The little shutdown they have has an impact and it ripples throughout the supply chain. I think the good news there, though, is unfortunately, China is much better at getting things back up and running in their ports than we are. And part of that is because of the technology, automation, digitization they have at their ports, which is something that we need to, continue to push and to talk about. But with regards to, what our members think are going to be continuing in 2022, the top three issues they cite are U.S. port congestion, workforce shortages, again, throughout the supply chain, and then ocean carrier capacity. Again, we're looking at imports to continue to increase in 2022, not at the double-digit rate we saw in 2021, but we're looking at single-digit increases for this year. The global port tracker that we just put out, again, calls for single-digit.
Aubrey Betancourt is president, CEO of the Almond Alliance.
And we got to start pushing back, because this is going to have a direct effect not only on my farmer, but it's going to have a direct effect on our longshoremen who are going into contract negotiations. They need to be working. I want them working. I want them working hard. I want them working with us, but they can't unload something if the thing doesn't come in. They can't load something if the thing doesn't stay. There's a lot in play. You're going to see that negotiation, so things to look out for. This summer, the longshoremen nationwide are going into contract negotiations, renewing their union labor contract. So it's that's going to play into this politically. That's going to be a key component into what gets negotiated and what doesn't. We really hope we don't have a longshoreman strike on our hands. I got to block arms here. We're all in this together on this one. We got to keep them working too, because they're critical to getting my product moved. We do have an infrastructure issue and a modernization issue. We do need better telecom, as I understand, to be able to communicate out to sea better back into the port so that we actually can coordinate who's coming in when and where and how many people do I need on the port when, so I know how many longshoremen to bring in. So we do need some upgrades in our infrastructure as well in that space. And as we're looking down that line, I'm to the point of let's throw everything on the wall and let's flex some muscle here. If we are supposed to, and this is a conversation I've been having with the state of California, if we're supposed to have the great modern infrastructure, we're supposed to go to an all-electric fleet, and we're going to do this, we have to get through this part first, right? But let's go ahead and start thinking through that. And what would that look like? What would it look like to have designated truck lanes? What would it look like to have designated inland ports for our truck systems so they can go in, recharge, and house equipment and trailers and things like that? We're building inland ports in Bakersfield and other places so that we can move the congestion out of the cities and get the congestion away from the ports, but try to have them strategically located so we can have access to our ag partners or to our export partners as well, so they can get access to the empties, get loaded up, and get back down in time. And how do we create and reimagine the modern infrastructure for supply chain? I know that's more of a long term and how do we survive, but honestly, we might as well think about it now because maybe in that we will find the solution that gets us through today.
It's Agriculture Today.
When your field calls for the perfect type of tough, go all in on FiberMax Cotton to deliver the right seed for whatever you're up against. Like the FiberMax 1621 GL variety. Strong as an ox, fights like a bull. Built to buck stress, boost yield quality, and muscle up when bacterial blight throws down. Whether you're looking for that type of tough or another, you can find it at FiberMax.com. FiberMax Cotton Seed from BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
AquaYield Regional Agronomist Dr. Tracy Carrillo talks about using NanoPro to improve your burn down.
NanoPro is a nanoliquid technology that grabs the molecules of your burn down herbicides. It enhances the delivery of your herbicides, making them more efficient. You oftentimes see a 3-to-1 return on investment. This will stretch your chemical use up to 30%, which means you're saving more money, especially with the availability and volatility of chemicals these days.
Find out more at AquaYield.com.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Why am I doing what I am? I really started in the ag chemical business.
Alan Grafton's with Keiko Isom on why he became a managerial accountant.
And this is really asking questions to farmers about financing, asking questions about what their cost was, their cost of production. We were helping growers finance their crops. And, you know, seemed to always get, you know, sometimes blank stares, like I'm not really sure what I'm spending here. I don't know what my break even is. I don't know that cost of production. So that was really what was the catalyst to me starting what I did and starting my own company, helping growers with that, helping with their bank relationships, helping them put together production loans, helping them work on cash flows, things like that, more the business side of the farm. So not from a tax standpoint, not from what happens during that crop year, that calendar year. We all know that one 12-month period, that does not tell you how successful your farm was in that time frame.
Now, he's not a CPA, but he does say questions he gets nationwide, no matter the geography or crops, are the same.
How am I doing? How do I compare? You know, how can I be better? How can I improve? Where am I doing poorly? It really doesn't matter where I am. Those are the kind of questions, those are the kind of phone calls I get and what people want to know. And they can't go, you know, their tax return doesn't necessarily tell them that story.
And the bottom line.
So what, you know, what we're really growing doesn't really, I mean, it matters obviously in the field and what we're doing and agronomically and how we process things. But from this standpoint, we're really talking about dollars and cents.
There are five basics, and he starts with.
There are really five basics, and some of these things are really going back to the real basics. And one of the first things I like to tell growers I work with is use real numbers. Don't lie to yourself. I mean, it's not doing anybody any good to make up a number that is not accurate. It doesn't, you know, put a yield that is not a cost, a price that is not a real number. And that not only goes for those items, but as you're tracking information, bad data is just, you know, it's in the future, it's going to hurt you when you're planning, when you're projecting. Literally 2 weeks ago, I'm sitting down with a couple of growers I work with, and we're going through their year, and, you know, their repairs are just super high. I mean, they're just really out of hand. I'm trying to figure out what's going on. Why are they so high? Then I'm sitting down with the bookkeeper, and we start going through the books and start getting into some detail, and then I come find out, well, tell me about this expense. Oh, well, you know, we did some remodeling on the house. So we go through there, and $140,000 later, you know, we know what they spent on remodeling the house. I don't care. It doesn't bother me. It's your money. You need to spend it. I don't care if you want to go buy a fleet of Harley Davidsons, go on vacation, you know, whatever. But if it's hidden, and the farm can pay for it, that's your right as a business owner. I mean, that's why you're in business, to help buy these things, right? So, you know, I'm not hating on anybody, but just be accurate. You know, so now when I go on, you know, I can pull that $140,000 out as I'm helping them budget for next year and say, okay, well, that's not a yearly expense. I don't need to plan on this every year. So I just say, don't lie to yourself. Tell the truth. Use real numbers.
It's Agriculture Today.
For years, Texas cotton growers have had a trusted partner when it comes to choosing their varieties. Next Gen brand cottonseed from AmeriCut. Next Gen varieties bred specifically for West Texas growers have performed year after year, even in harsh conditions. And for this year's season, there are several new Bolgard 3 Extend Flex varieties available. Contact your local Next Gen representative or dealer today to learn more about varieties suited for your needs. Next Gen, your West Texas partner for performance cottonseed.
If you don't push yourself, how will you know what you're really made of? Cotton Research and Promotion Program works to develop innovative performance technologies that redefine cotton's capabilities and helps athletes push themselves further. Cotton Incorporated is working hard to educate consumers about cotton's versatility, especially in the athletic apparel market. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Research is incorporating a compound made with peanut skins as a way to boost nutritional levels in foods, with specific focus on antioxidants in milk chocolate. USDA researcher Lisa Dean says this study approach is for two reasons. First, to avoid risk of consumption by persons with peanut allergies by having a product that usually contains peanuts in some form.
Our idea was we wanted to limit the use of this functional ingredient with these bioactive properties to things that people would normally associate with peanut. So chocolate, they go together. There's many products that contain peanut and chocolate.
And second, consumers' preference for milk chocolate from a taste and texture perspective versus dark chocolate. However, such milk chocolate products may have to wait to be available to consumers, as there are already commercial patents through companies for incorporating nut skins in all food products. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.